Welcome to the Holy Sh** Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy sh**. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit for what's today's date? It is August 7th, 2019. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
Yes, and I'm the co-host, Frank Natel. Great to be with you again today.
And Frank, we've had a very interesting weekend. I know it's Wednesday, but lots of things have gone on this weekend. Everybody kind of knows about the shootings that took place in El Paso and Dayton. It's probably going to be where we spend the most of our time together today on. How about a quick recap? So in case somebody was living under a rock, they're not lost.
Yeah. Within a 24-hour period, roughly, there were two mass shootings that took place in the United States. One was in El Paso, Texas, where 22 people lost their lives in a Walmart that was adjacent to a mall. A lot of the victims were targeted for their Mexican heritage. And then in Dayton, Ohio, nine people died as a result of a mass shooting, not including the shooter who was also himself killed. So I guess 10 people died in Dayton, Ohio on Sunday, this past Sunday. So the El Paso shooting was Saturday and the Dayton shooting was Sunday, but it was in the early morning hours of Sunday in an area called the Oregon District, which in fact, just as a personal note, when I was attending law school at the University of Dayton, for the time period between my second and third year, including my third year of school, I lived in the Oregon District. It's just surreal to me to think that people were just out enjoying. I know the people of Dayton. I know the people that live in that area. I don't know the people that were shot. But I know generally the type of people that live there, they're just, you know, as everybody, I'm sure, just, you know, normal, going about their business, just enjoying life. And they were gunned down for no reason. So,
you know, if I'm not mistaken, Frank, there have been, I want to say, close to 240 mass shootings this year. And I forget what day of the year this is. I want to say we're a little more. We're averaging a little more than one a day. Does that sound about right to you?
It sounds about right because I mean, if you think about it, there's 365 days in a year, and we're in the eighth month now, but just the beginning of the eighth month, so we have about just about 4 months left, which would be about 120 days, a little under 120 days left in the year. To take 120 or 365, and you're at 245. So yeah, just about right there.
Just about right. I mean, for argument's sake, we're averaging about one a day, maybe a little over one a day. So at this point, the best we could hope for is just under one a day. We're not going to get to a half a day. We won't get that, right? So we're going to be somewhere, let's say 60 or 70%, say three quarters to two thirds of a mass shooting per day on average. Does that sound about right to you? We're just doing like really quick round math, but does that seem about right to you?
About right. Even if we didn't have another one all year, which hopefully we don't. You're right. Yeah. Yep, essentially can fill two thirds.
That's staggering.
Just pick randomly two thirds of the days in the year, and you're going to get a mass shooting. That's crazy.
As though they were scripted. The Republican Party came out and pretty much blamed everything but the guns. Again, they blamed video games. For Christ's sake, Frank. Video games again. We're going back to
How many people have you shot? How many people have you shot, Master Patsy?
You know what? None, obviously. But I don't get it that we're still going back to this same old argument that has been debunked. I can't tell you how many times by everybody in the world. They're going to movies, they're going to video games, they're going to so on and so forth. Frank, you know, and let's be honest, you and I mean, we're older, right? We're 50, 51. So as far as the gamers are go or the gaming community, we're old. I mean, we're freaking ancient. You don't know too many half a century old people playing video games, but we do. But that also leads to an important argument, and that is we see how this younger generation, boy, do I sound old. God, I sound like my father at this point, right? How this younger generation and the kids that play these games, they're not violent people. This thing is so stupid that they're making this argument. It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening that you have people who think so little of your intelligence that they're willing to say things like this, and they're expecting you to believe them.
Well, the problem with that is, and thank God, you know, the reaction to those types of blame, the type of blame that's being assigned, is not being widely accepted, because now you've got a lot of people across the country who have kids, who have had kids that have grown up playing video games, that have listened to music, whatever, and they're looking at their kids and saying, that doesn't pan out. You know, this didn't happen in my life, didn't happen in our neighborhood. And also they see what's going on with what you and I think, and a lot of people in our country think that the El Paso shooting was clearly about, which was division and hate and mm-hmm. vilifying a group of people, which, you know, are brown and Mexican people. And that's, I think that's being widely accepted by the public. If you look at the public's reaction to this, the media doesn't seem to be universally quick to accept the fact that the public is already willing to and accepting the fact that El Paso shooting was stoked essentially by Trump's rhetoric, you know, about an invasion of our southern border by Mexicans. According to Trump, and then the person who shot them, his manifesto was, I'm going to basically help stem this invasion at the southern border. So I'm going to go kill as many Mexicans as I can. And you know, the public, I think, has already accepted that was a big reason why this happened. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit less enamored with the media's response as a whole. I mean, we know the Fox News folks are going to give their excuses. But there have been some other media outlets that have let me down as well. And I'm sure you too. I mean, you've alluded to this idea that there's been blame cast to, and I think some of that's politicians, the Republican politicians, but blame cast upon, you know, movies and video games. But tell me some of the notable, you know, sources, or if you have any, or if you want to reflect on any things that you've heard about, certainly let's hear about them.
Just generally speaking, I have pretty much lost all faith in Chuck Todd. Okay?
Yeah.
Pretty much lost all faith in him. I have never in my life seen somebody who is – he is – that is more than willing to go to the whole both sides do it than anybody I've ever seen in my life. I mean, this is the guy, for folks who are a little bit older, maybe our age, maybe, you know, slightly younger – who remember the Looney Tunes cartoon of the Roadrunner and the Coyote. This guy would put equal blame on the Roadrunner as he would on the coyote who's trying to kill him. Right? Yeah. I mean, he would. And he would do it with a straight face and try to be as legitimate as he could possibly be. It's scary that he's I understand why he has a show. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, he's the news director or pretty high up in NBC that, you know, he gets to have that. But holy shit, dude, come on. You and I have both experienced our displeasure or disappointment, whatever you want to call it, you especially with the USA Today and how they're pretty much turning into Trump apologists. CNN is pretty good. Cuomo, for some reason, will hit hard, and then he'll step back and he'll say, you know, he'll try to give both sides equal time. It's only Don Lemon that really calls people out there a lot, and it's no surprise that I really, really like Don Lemon. As far as MSNBC is concerned, if it's not Rachel Maddow or Nicole Wallace, their shows, particularly, not their guests, because I love Joy Reid, I love Reverend Al, I love a lot of these guys, but just their shows in particular. MSNBC tries to take both sides. I understand from what I understand, Morning Joe is really hitting Trump hard on and the Republicans hard on a lot of things. It's just that I don't put a whole lot of credibility in Morning Joe simply because they were more than willing to let Trump call it all in right up until the point where Trump started talking about Mika. Then all of a sudden, we're no longer Republicans. We're independents. We're going to slam Trump. So they're, you know, it's, they were more than willing to play the game until he turned on them. And then all of a sudden they're jaded.
Get a point on that. And it's sad that it took a personal attack to do that, but it's also one of those things that I would like to point out to folks who have been apologists for Trump or have been willing to overlook Trump's actions because they have targeted, let's make it the most benign thing you can make it, because I think that a lot of folks don't want to line themselves up with, at least openly don't want to line themselves up with racism. But a lot of folks will say something like, you know, the Chinese for so many years have been abusing the trade imbalance. And they really have hurt our economy because they manipulate their currency and they've stolen our patents and, you know, they've done all these things. And here's a guy in Trump that kind of came in and said, I'm not going to play by those rules anymore. And I'm going to try to straighten stuff out. And I'm going to make it better for us in our country. I'm going to bring our economy back to being number one economy in the world, which, by the way, we still were already. But, for some reason, he'd convinced people we weren't. But anyway, you know, there is some truth. There's a grain of truth to some of those things about China. Okay. But here's what I'm getting at with the Mika thing. The farmers were more than willing to go along with Trump and kind of look the other way with all this other stuff that's going on behind all this rhetoric with Trump, because they felt like this is our guy. He's going to protect us. He's going to make sure that our economy is good. We're going to be strong. And then when it came to this stuff with China and it really hit their bottom line, they've started to turn on Trump. And you're starting to see more of them be vocal about how his policies are not good for farmers. And my point is, what's not good for somebody personally maybe opens their eyes to what's not good for us as a country. Unfortunately, for a long time in our country, people vote with their own pocketbook. You know, if I'm rich and I'm doing well, or if I'm fed, food on the table, everything's going okay, then I'm not going to make any changes, because why should I change if everything's going okay? But once it starts to affect somebody personally, then they start to look a little bit more critically at the person. So I don't like it that that's the way people, you know, do things. But if that's what it's going to take to wake people up, let's have it happen sooner than later, right?
And you're right. I wonder why these guys, and you know, the problem we have on the left, and let's face it, we're both on the left, and I'm proud of that. I'm not gonna try to sugarcoat this at all. One of the problems that we have that the left has always had and will always have is the left has a messaging problem, right? They can't get their message out. If they were the only people with a blowhorn, right, they would still have a hard time getting their message out. And one of the problems that the left has is whenever they're condemning these things and even questioning people's reasoning for voting for Trump, is we have a tendency to make these people morons, right? We have a tendency to make these people, well, just stupid, right? We always can, and they get very offended by it, and rightfully so. They should, because the rhetoric that we give out, the things that we say, are targeting the people who voted for this guy, who supported this guy, and we're saying that was stupid, that was moronic, that was, how the fuck could you vote for somebody like that? What is wrong with you for doing that? And we fail to realize sometimes that, look, sometimes, and I use the word desperate, and I'm using it a little loosely, that probably a little more looser than I should, but whenever you have an expectation, and Obama gave you a great expectation of things, right? And for whatever reason, for a lot of reasons, and legitimate reasons, don't get me wrong, legitimate reasons, he wasn't able to fulfill a lot of these expectations that a lot of these folks had. It wasn't due to a lack of trying. It wasn't due to not wanting to or not putting forth a great effort to. There was just too much against him in order to get these things done, especially after he lost Congress, right? Especially after the midterms, whenever the Democrats just got wiped out. So people were desperate. They heard this guy who was saying things that affected them emotionally. That, and you know, you've heard me say it. Everybody listening's heard me say it. You know, my wife will tell everybody that's ever sat at her desk that your emotions will always trump your logic. Will always happen. It happens all the time. 90% of the reason that you have extramarital affairs is because your emotions overtake and trump your logic. It happens all the time. Even in things that you hold most sacred, your emotions will always overtake your logic. And so they vote for this clown. And so now, on the left, we kind of make them victims twice, right? We make they're victims for their vote, which was a bad choice. Okay, well, in hindsight, things are always easier in hindsight. And then we condemn them again for making that choice. So you have this farmer who's about to lose his farm, or is, you know, waiting on subsidies from the government because this clown that he voted for just cut his legs out from under him. And not only did his choice screw him, but we're not being exactly supportive or compassionate, and we're, you know, we're beating this clown when he's down. We don't, the left doesn't do itself any favors whenever we do stuff like this.
Well, and you know, the point in time that we're in right now, and I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. You know, we have to remember that human beings make decisions that aren't always the best decisions, especially through the lens of history. But what we're looking for now is people to re-examine and reevaluate and make the right decisions and the right choices, because we're really at a crossroads. And we've been saying this for a while. You and I have been ringing the alarm bells. There's other people that are ringing the alarm bells. And regardless of the people who are trying to be Trump apologists, and I'm going to touch on one little last thing about, I guess, the Trump apologists. There's evidence that the second shooter, the person who was the Dayton shooter, was a quote-unquote left-wing, extreme left-wing person who wasn't directly, I would say, directly influenced by, at least by the evidence that they've gathered so far, wasn't directly evidenced linked to Trump's rhetoric, that he was more of a Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren guy. And then there's been some opinion articles, one written by CNN, Jennings from CNN, who said, you know, it's just not right to blame Trump. That's not the answer. Blaming Trump for shootings is not the answer, according to Scott Jennings. And the reason he wrote this is because of this information about the shooter in Dayton. But there's a telling line in his article. He says, this is about the Dayton shooter, okay? The shooter appears not to be a white nationalist, but rather a full-blown pro-Antifa socialist. Was his attack influenced by his political views? We don't know that yet. Boom. Okay, right there. We don't know that yet. We don't know that yet. But what do we know about the El Paso shooter? The El Paso shooter specifically said in his own words, I'm going to go kill as many Mexicans as I can. And his other rhetoric that he wrote about was because Trump was talking about this invasion at the southern border. So to just say, well, we're a little worried about this other guy who shot people, and we don't want blame going to, you know, Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders over this shooting, so we're not going to blame Trump for clearly what Trump is responsible for. Okay. And I'm going to take it a step further and say this. We know that. Everybody knows that. The public knows it. And they're not making excuses for it, although the media is. Trump's rhetoric and the ugliness of this country right now and the anger that he has fomented will lead to people from every walk of life and from every political influence to doing violence, because we're descending into a violent time. We're descending into this division and hatred to the degree that it's not about, well, I'm going to wait till the 2020 election and go vote for somebody. I'm going to take it upon myself to make sure that your side doesn't have the ability to run this country anymore. And that's stemming directly out of Trump and his rhetoric.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I like to tell people I'm a peaceful man who practices violence, right? Yeah. And I've worked a lot of bars when I was in college. I worked bars whenever I got out of, you know, after I got my engineering degree, I still worked bars. It was absolutely amazing. I'm the only engineer you'll ever meet that actually was a bouncer, right? You'll never meet that dynamic again. And I know how violent people can be. And I know how quickly things can escalate into a very violent episode, even whenever you're talking about very peaceful people, people who 99.99% of the time would never, ever do anything like that. But for whatever reason, and okay, obviously alcohol is involved. So maybe, you know, that truth serum is a bit of a contributing factor, but you will see people turn on a dime and just lose their shit because, again, it's an emotional response, right? Whenever we're looking at this El Paso guy, he was angry. There's no doubt he was angry. He drove what, 9 or 10 hours to go to that Walmart specifically, to that Walmart in order to shoot people. Right. I mean, he took a half a day. And, you know, think about how much anger is involved there. He took a half a day, which he was, I promise you, he was assuming that was going to be the last day of his life, just to go and take out as many people as he possibly could before he was dropped. And he was more than willing to do that. Right.
The crazy thing, he didn't get shot. He got walked out. Yeah. Right.
I mean, and that's a whole nother story there, right? I mean, you look at how he was treated, and then you got the black guy who was paraded through town by the sheriff's department with people on horseback, like it was the fucking 1870s or whatever the fuck it was. I don't know how somebody can be that angry in order to drive 10 hours, or let's say he drives like I do and did it 9 hours, just to go shoot people. Okay. I mean, that's sad. I mean, that in and of itself, somebody willing to do that. And let's say he didn't, let's say he missed every time he pulled the trigger. Let's say he missed every single time and nobody died. The fact that he was willing to travel that far just to go into that particular store to try to kill people in and of itself is a complete tragedy, right? It really is. The Dayton guy, that one's just strange. Dayton police are still don't know why, right?
He killed his sister. He killed his own sister first.
His own sister. And according to CNN today, they actually have video of him in a bar, and he looks like he's just in a bar having a good time like you and I would be.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the footage on CNN, but He showed no indications of being agitated, of being somebody who was on edge. I guess if you think about it, somebody who's willing to do this stuff normally is very calm because they've come to terms with the fact that they're going to die. But this guy's interacting. He's this one's just strange to me.
Yeah, yeah. And let's go back to your point, because it's a great point about the guy in El Paso who does the shooting. It's a great point you made about the 9-hour drive, because think about the intensity with which somebody has to go about this. They've got to gear up. They've got to get in the car, plan their trip, stop at least, you know, stop sometime, get to your location, pull out your gear, and start murdering people. So that's after 9 hours of thinking about that. I mean, usually, you know, if you're mad at somebody and you're not to the point of wanting to kill them, but you're just mad at somebody, if you go in another room and do something different for a little while, the anger typically dissipates. Now, think about right. carrying that level of anger for 9 hours. It's crazy. So your point, another point that I want to make about this and why it's so clearly linked to Trump. People look at the map. Okay, the guy was driving from somewhere around Dallas, outside of Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. Dallas is in the northern part of Texas. It's nowhere near the Mexican border. Nowhere near the Mexican border. In comparison to El Paso. Okay. So he clearly picked a place where he's close to the border. And he also picked the place where there's a lot of Mexican people who come back and forth from Juarez to El Paso and El Paso back to Juarez. That community is well known to have that type of population. So he was clearly targeting that location. It's not like he drove from Dallas to Houston or from Dallas to San Antonio. San Antonio is the capital of Texas, and he could have made a splash there if he wanted to make the news, you know. But he clearly went to a location where it was highly probable that he was going to be murdering Mexican people.
Yeah, I like I said, I can't believe that somebody would be that angry, because at that point, that's all it is. That's just pure anger that's driving this at that point, right? And then you sit there and you try to figure out, you know, where this shit comes from. Let's go back to what happened. So all this happened, and then last night on the Fox Entertainment Network, you have one Tucker Carlson, and I will say it again. How the fuck can you take anything that somebody named Tucker says is gospel? But he tells his viewers that the country's white supremacy problem is a hoax. All right, so let's just piss off people more, right? He tells people it's just like the Russian hoax. It's a conspiracy theory used to divide the country and keep a hold on power. This is, I'm reading from CNN Business. And it was during his monologue where he asserted that the whole thing is a lie. How about that one? Huh? How about that one? So you have 22 people who were doing nothing but going to Walmart, who got killed, whose only thing that they did wrong was they went to Walmart, and then 3 days later, Tucker Carlson gets on the Fox Entertainment Network and says, this whole white supremacy thing, this whole thing, that's bullshit. It's a lie. It's a hoax. How does that help?
Well, he's only clearly trying to help one thing, and that's the last part of the patriarchy of the old white guard that, you know, is somehow afraid. You made a great point, Master Patsy, earlier today when you texted me. This is what fear does to institutions and to societies. In response to my text to you saying that the GOP is a hot mess, you said that's what fear will do. And that's exactly what Tucker Carlson is preying upon, because he doesn't want to admit or acknowledge what has become so painfully clear to everybody, including a lot of people within the Republican Party, that this is all about preserving the white power structure in our country and the fear that it's going to be lost somehow. and, you know, the huge backlash to the fact that we had a black president. So he doesn't want to acknowledge that. He's trying to push it down, tamp it down with propaganda that is clearly from the playbook of Trump and his playbook strategy of just denying the obvious. So in response to Tucker Carlson, I give you Senator McAllister. Senator McAllister, who represents the 20th legislative district in the state of Nebraska, as Midwest and as Central America as you central of the state of the country of the United States of America that you can get, right in the heartland, a Republican. This is from a Republican. The Republican Party is enabling white supremacy in our country. Boom. That's the first line he says in his tweet.
Mm-hmm.
As a lifelong Republican, it pains me to say this, but it's the truth. I, of course, am not suggesting that all Republicans are white supremacists, nor am I saying that the average Republican is even racist. He goes on to say, what I am saying, though, is that the Republican Party is, in all capital letters, complicit to obvious racist and immoral activity inside our party. I'm going to repeat that. The Republican Party is complicit to obvious racist and immoral activity inside our party. So to Tucker Carlson, I would say it's obvious to this Republican senator who is serving in the unicameral, meaning they have one legislative branch. They don't have a House and a Senate. They have one in the state of Nebraska. He's the Republican representative for that district. He is the senator and the representative. He says that his own party is complicit to the obvious racist and immoral activity inside his own party. We have a Republican president who continuously stokes racist fears in his base. He calls certain countries shitholes, tells women of color to go back to where they came from, and lies more than he tells the truth. We have Republican senators and representatives who look the other way and say nothing for fear that will negatively affect their elections. There's that fear thing, Master Patsy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No more. When the history books are written, I refuse to be someone who said nothing. The time is now for us Republicans to be honest with what is happening inside our party. We are better than this, and I implore my Republican colleagues to stand up and do the right thing. We all like to cite Abraham Lincoln's Republican lineage when it is politically expedient, but now is the time to act like Lincoln and take a stand. So very important thread from Senator McAllister. And when you see people like this, and it scared the hell out of the GOP party, because the Republican Party in Nebraska, after he tweeted this, asked him to leave. And he put in bold capital letters, no.
You know, Frank, the thing that I don't want to say gets me, but the one thing that kind of gives me hope all the time is I've said it quite a few times. I really don't want anybody to completely agree with me, because holy shit, if people did, I don't know which way the world would start spinning the opposite way, right? But whether you agree with me or not, it's important that both of us be legitimate. We can disagree, and we should disagree, okay? Because that's what, you know, disagreements between two people, the things that they agree on is probably the truth, right? That's probably the purest truth there is. Whenever you have somebody going in one direction, the other person going in the other direction, and the universal things that they agree on is the ultimate truth. So whenever you have people who are recognizing faults, or they're recognizing strengths, even if you want to go the opposite way, and both sides, the yin and the yang, are both more than willing to look at whatever this is and say, this is a strength, this is a weakness, this is this, this is this, this is this. That's legitimacy. And that's whenever problems get solved. That's whenever progress happens. That's whenever the balance, the universal balance, the balance that the universe is looking for happens. This guy did that. He recognized that. Now, you want to make an argument that say it took him too long or whatever it is. That's just a personal opinion. The fact of the matter is he did it. And then his own party asks him to leave. What does that say to you about the state of the Republican Party, understanding that there is that yin and yang, that the two opposite things that must be in balance? What does that tell you about stuff like that, about his party?
It tells me, and if you look at it very closely and you look at across the board, what's the response? This is a response that's it's very, very telling, right? Because it's like, well, you don't agree with me, so leave. And what we heard this recently from Trump about the quote unquote squad. Since you don't agree with me, you're un-American, go just leave, go back to where you quote unquote came from. So any opinion that's different than mine, this is what the Republican Party line seems to be taking now. Anything that's different than my opinion, I have no place for you. If you're different from what the way I see our America developing, then we have no place for you in America, so leave. And that's so un-American. That is so un-American. And it's so against the grain of what we all cherish and hold dear. And now, you know, here's where they're trying to come against this talking point. And they're saying, how in the world is diversity our strength, quote unquote, is one of the headlines from Tucker Carlson, right? Is, you know, how in the world is diversity our strength? Well, you know, you start to combat genetic mutations when you have diversity in your bloodline. You start to combat diseases. You're more resistant to diseases when you have genetic diversity. You have strengths of different opinions that help you sharpen your mind when you have different opinions and you have different viewpoints. So all those things, and there's many more, but it's a fear, as you've pointed out very astutely, it's a fear-based theory and response to say, we don't want a separate opinion, so get out, leave, go. We don't tolerate you because you think differently than we do. Even on something that's so obvious, we just don't want to be called out on it. So please leave. And that tells me that the whole party is so scared to death that they're going to lose power. That, you know, it reminds me of like somebody clutching on to, you know, a thread of threadbare rope that's going to break. You know, and that mm-hmm. somebody's over here going to help them climb back up on top of the ledge with two strong hands and a rope tied around their waist.
Absolutely.
And instead of reaching over to that person.
And, you know, Frank, fear is a huge motivator, right? It is. Fear is probably, I'll go on record and say fear is probably the biggest motivator there is, right? At least the most intense. Without a doubt, it is. And we can get into a whole nother discussion that would take another 2 or 3 hours about how the Republican Party, the conservatives especially, are just perfect targets for somebody who wants to tap into people's fears, right? You can do that because if you're conservative, you immediately fear change. You immediately fear things that aren't yours or aren't like you. So it's very easy to invoke fear. So I really don't want to get into that. So after all of this happened, right? So we have the shootings that happened over the weekend. We have all of the lefties saying we got to do the gun control. We have to go through that whole thing again. After every shooting, the lefties do that, and then Mitch McConnell disappears for a few days, and then he'll come back and he'll act like nothing happened, or he'll say something really motherfucking stupid and people will lose their shit. But no one really pays attention because Trump will go off and do something that's even more fucking crazy, and we'll forget all about the 30 or 40 people who just got killed over the past weekend. But today, on Wednesday, don't forget this shit happened over the weekend. On Wednesday, our fearful commander in chief, the occupant of the White House, decided to go to El Paso and Dayton.
Well, he must have left on Sunday morning on a train, right? Is that how he did it?
No, that's not how he did. He took Air Force One, apparently, or what's the helicopter? Is that Navy One or something like that. I honest to God, I can't remember. But my guess is DC to Dayton, and then El Paso is probably on the airplane.
So you're telling me he waited till today?
Yeah, he waited till today. He went there today. People didn't want him there. I'm sure, you know, people on the left didn't want him there. Obviously, people on the right did. The difference being, it seemed to me that, and I'm being very generous, okay? Understand that. I'm being very, very generous, that it was an equal split. Let's just say generous, again, being very generous, that it was a 50-50 split between people who wanted him there and people who didn't want him there, which in itself should tell you a whole fucking lot, right? The fact that half of the people involved in this didn't want him there. I promise you, whenever Sandy Hook happened, there wasn't half the people who didn't want Obama to show his face. I promise you there wasn't. Even the people who didn't like him wasn't 50%. So let's just be stupid and say 50-50. I promise it wasn't, but let's just be stupid and say it was. Okay? And this is coming from the USA Today. The notorious baby Trump balloon, right? You know that one, right? The one that was in England forever. Made an appearance in Dayton, Ohio. Okay. according to the USA Today, it took only 24 hours for the organizers to raise more than $3,000 to bring that symbol to Dayton. It only took them 24 hours to raise $3,000 to bring a fucking blimp to protest him going to Dayton after the shooting.
But okay. It took him three days to get there.
Yeah, it took him 3 days to get there, and it took organizers 24 hours to raise enough money to bring this blimp from wherever the fuck it was to Dayton. Okay?
It's hilarious. I mean, it's hilarious.
It is, right? I mean, in Dayton, and I'm reading again from the USA Today, and don't forget, as we've already established, this is a Trump apologist newspaper at this point. In Dayton, the giant floating diapered caricature of the president that has appeared in anti-Trump events in London and Washington, D.C., on it posted a banner saying, "Stop being a baby, stand up to the NRA." Protesters carried signs and everything that said, "Do something, just say no to fascism, and protect our kids, not our guns." And this is just in Dayton, right? This is just in Ohio, who, don't forget, went to Trump. In the election, right? Trump carried Ohio.
Yeah. And Montgomery, which is where Dayton is.
Right. Well, Texas is going to go red. There's a lot of talk on the left about maybe Texas going blue. I don't believe it. I'm sorry, I don't. I hope to God I'm wrong. I really do. But I don't believe it. However, in El Paso, the mayor, DeMargo, said that he would show up for Trump's visit to honor the office of the president, but not Trump himself. I promise you, Trump and his supporters don't give a fuck, and they don't see a separation between the two. It's funny, and I don't mean that like in a laughing matter. Just odd that you have. Again, we'll go back to our one and only Black president, never received this kind of pushback, right? He never received this kind of anything. And I promise you that drives this piece of shit crazy. But in any case, the mayor, he did show up, but obviously wasn't very happy about it. A lot of people who were working in hospitals, obstetricians and so forth, there was a petition I'm trying to read here with an hour. Hundreds of people signed an online petition posted by medical workers at UMC, which apparently is the University Medical Center, I'm assuming, which stated, quote, given President Trump's rhetoric on immigration, we believe that a visit to our medical campus would be harmful for both the families affected and the medical team's caring for those families. So apparently he wanted to go to the hospital and meet with the families of people who were shot. So they didn't even want him in the hospital, right? At least a good percentage of people didn't want him in hospital. And let me reiterate one thing, Frank. This is Texas.
Yeah, and this is the president. Right?
This is the president of the United
States. This is the Republican Republican president of the United States going to Texas. And I'm not saying it's a majority, but I'm saying it's a big enough percentage that it's getting headlines in the fucking USA Today.
Right.
That's got to be disturbing for people who are you know the strategists or whatever. It's got to be disturbing to these people. Because I promise Trump doesn't give a fuck.
They used to be out there saying, office of the president. Respect the office of the presidency. People are so offended by Trump himself now that even the title president of the United States is not appealing enough to have this guy come visit victims in a hospital because of his rhetoric. It's amazing. Of course, I was being facetious earlier when I said, did he get on a train and he really waited 3 days? I knew all that, as you and I spoke about this earlier this morning. But I found it also to shift to Dayton, the Dayton mayor, who is Democrat, and I want to say that up front. Earlier in the week, the news media came to her and said, we heard Trump's coming to Dayton. And she said, her name's Nan Whaley. She said, oh, I haven't heard from him or his people. Maybe he's going to Toledo. and you know what that's in reference to, right? I mean, the people who are listening to this podcast maybe know or they don't know, but Trump made a statement after the shooting where he presented his condolences to the families of the shooting victims in El Paso and Toledo. Didn't even know that it was in Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, isn't that sad? And he was reading off a teleprompter. And honest to God, I swear to God, he was reading at like a third or fourth grade level. But the fact that he's reading off a teleprompter and he still fucked it up.
Yeah,
that's frightening. One of the protesters said, and this is the one of the protesters. I want to say, I'm trying to see where it was. It looks like it's in El Paso. Forgive me if I'm wrong. Said, the city needs to heal right now. We're so stressed. And what I thought was an absolutely telling statement. We are not a photo opportunity for Trump.
Yeah.
So people have figured out his play for quite some time. If they're willing to start calling it out now, because normally people don't do that, right? They figure it out, but they don't say anything. Whenever you have somebody calling it out, it's because they're frustrated with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you're seeing people calling it out now, saying we're not a photo opportunity for this guy, which means the only reason you're here is to make the Fox Entertainment Network viewers happy. That's it. You don't give a shit, and you're not going to do anything. Mitch McConnell's not going to do anything. No one's going to do a fucking thing. You're just here to make yourself look good and for the Fox and Friends tomorrow morning to say what a great job you did.
That's it.
And I'll ask you this, and I already know the answer. I'll ask you this. You think that's all he cares about?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. You're damn right. That's all he cares about. He doesn't care about anything else. I remember Sandy Hook, and I was working at, you know, I mean, I was sitting at my desk. I'm the only engineer at the company I was working for. And I saw what happened in Sandy Hook and my heart sank, right? I mean, I was devastated. And whenever word got around, even our guys out in the shop, they were just devastated. And we watched the president that night. We watched Obama that night. And I never in my life, and I was 40-something at the time, right? So we're talking 4 decades minimum. I never saw a president break down like Obama did, right? It was very obvious that he was hurt. This shook him, and it should have. It shook everybody, right? Children, elementary school kids were killed. They were shot by bullets bigger than their fingers, okay? And this guy was devastated. And I promise you, it's because he was envisioning his own kids being there, right? And now we have Trump, who's looking at these things as photo ops. It's just a photo op for him. It makes you crazy. It angers you. It makes you question everything whenever you see the president of your country, the guy that's the face of your nation, the person that you look up to, right? What's the one thing that you say, you know, I want to be president of the United States, right? Two things every kid wants to do is either, you know, play in Yankee Stadium or be president of the United States, right? That's it. That's the American dream. And this is what this guy has knocked it down to. It's got to kill people to see this guy look at this thing as nothing but a photo op.
You know, people should go back and watch the now late Mac Miller, who is from Pittsburgh. And
I apologize.
It's okay. He hit on the motivation of Trump before Trump was elected to the presidency. He was on the Larry Wilmore, the nightly show with Larry Wilmore. I don't believe Larry Wilmore hosts that show anymore, but go just search this, Mac Miller on Trump on Larry Wilmore. He has an amazing 3.5 minute monologue about Trump. And it hits on exactly what you're talking about the photo op and about how he just does anything and everything to stay in the limelight, whether that's for one more minute, one more second, whatever it means for him to just be, to have the attention on him. And he also talks about what we talked about today about if you don't like it, then leave. And if, you know, if Trump gets elected, then people are going to say, I'm going to leave. And Mac Miller said, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to stay here and remind you every day what kind of clown you are. And, you know,
wow.
And you know, it's a great commentary in it. And it kind of reinvigorates your spirit when you see something like that, because he called it out before this even happened. And he's not here with us anymore to talk about it. But, you know, it was visionary. You know, it really was.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Frank, the only thing I can say is I hope people are paying attention. And I don't think it was two podcasts ago. Maybe it was, but I don't think it was. Where you know, you and I both said, look, the biggest problem people are facing is they simply don't have time to pay attention. I refuse to believe that people don't want to. I just don't think that they have time to. And I hope people are starting to pay attention to what he's doing and the damage he's doing, and the fact that you have an entire party who is more than willing to enable him to do these things kind of speaks volumes of just how far the Republican Party has fallen. And I believe me when I tell you, I'm not a fan of the Republican Party by any means, but I still honestly feel that you need you need two parties. You need the yin and the yang, right? Like I've been saying, you need that balance. And the Republican Party is a mess right now.
Well, for the good of our country, hopefully they'll have a lot of people that really do wake up to the fact that they better grab onto the rope that's the more solid one and get away from this fear-based white nationalist, you know, string that they're holding on to.
Yeah, I hope that enough people, enough Republicans, look at what's going on in their party and they say, you know what, that's enough. I really do. I don't know if they're going to, because I've always said that Republicans will always choose their party over their country. But I'm secretly hoping that there's enough of them that say, you know what, no, that's enough. We got to do something about this, or our party's lost. if we don't cut the head off of this thing, we won't have this party, you know, in another 4 or 6 years. So hopefully that's what happens. I'm praying anyhow. There's enough level-headed people to say, you know what, we're just gonna have to eat it for 4 years, because if we don't, we're dead.
Yeah. Let's hope.
Well, Frank, this has been a great pod. Great episode. You touched on a bunch of great points. Best TV episode. I don't know if you can hear my Alexa's going off right now. You get real serious and then something like this happens and it kind of wakes you up a little bit. Great job tonight. Is there anything you want to say to everybody before we call it an episode?
No, I just I reiterate that I'm glad everybody joins us, and it's great to be here again. And thank you for keeping this thing going, Master Patsy. You're doing a great job, and I'm loving presenting these talking points and topics for everybody to hopefully give some thought to every week.
Yeah, I hope people at least listen to us. They don't have to agree with us, but just listen to what we're saying and understand that what we're saying isn't something that's just we're just saying just to spout off points. You know, Frank and I don't do that. What we say, we mean. So for everybody listening, as I always say, if your time is very valuable to you, the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. It truly does. So until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't understand what that means, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. So until next week, we'll see you. Everybody, please be safe, take care, and God bless. Bye-bye. Please be safe, take care, and God bless.
Butchered Sports. Raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Holy Sh** with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, holy shit.